Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 950.
950?
950, Katie Levine.
50 away from 1,000.
Oh my God. But you know what though? That's still, well, yeah, initially we were going to do one a week, but we've gotten so many great guests.
Yeah, it's been pretty quick. Like
two or three a week sometimes. So we're going to get to 1,000 before the end of the year. Yeah. What are we supposed to do? Is this, we're supposed to do a thing for 1,000? I'm sure it has to be a hostful, I think.
Yeah.
It either has to be a hostful or we have to like resurrect Lincoln or Caesar or someone for the 1,000th episode.
Yeah, you gotta do something big. We'll have to think about it. We have 50 episodes.
But that's going to go, it's going to be like, there's no time.
Yeah, it's like 20 weeks.
I've been doing the podcast for 8 years, or 8.5 years almost. I mean, for crap's sake. Well, let's just jump right into the corkboard. Katie, you have some corkboard related business that you want to share?
I do. Alicia Hubble writes, I started making postcards in 2012 from donated recycled bags, and I have built connections within the Chicago community. I am now making blank cards, envelopes, home decor, and more by embroidering, watercoloring, and sketching. If anyone is interested, please check out my work on Instagram at Granny Abel and on Etsy at Granny Abel. And that's A-B-E-L-L. And Greg Walker writes, my brother Ian graduated with his Bachelor of Fine Arts in Illustration last year, and he's been working hard to get his career going. His art focuses in monster type illustrations done by hand. His stuff is really cool. You can check it out. He has buttons, stickers, prints, and originals available for purchase at walkerillustrations.storenv.com, or you can check out his Instagram at walkerillustrations.
Thank you. This episode is Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy, who are in The Broken Lizard.
Yep.
And Super Troopers 2 is in theaters. What day?
420.
What? Oh my God. But I hear it's fucking amazing. And they're such great guys. They also do the podcast Chewing It, which Katie also produces. And they're fucking funny and fucking nice to the point where I'm having to swear for emphasis. But God, I love these guys. They're just nice guys.
They are. They're super nice
and
chill,
funny.
Cool guys.
So please go see Super Troopers 2 because they crowdfunded it.
Yep.
And they got the thing made. And they are such an amazing example of, hey, our fans want us to do this thing. We're going to do this thing. And we're going to give it all we got, you know. And I'm really proud of them. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see the movie. And you should, too. This episode brought to you by Mattress Firm. Hey, person. Are you struggling to get to sleep? If so, Mattress Firm wants to help you. They're America's neighborhood mattress store, and they're going to help you stretch your budget a little bit further when you're looking for ways to improve your sleep. And it's not just that they're mattress experts. They're going to straight up help you build your bed from headboards to adjustable bases to sheets. They even have bedroom decor. They're going to have you covered literally and figuratively. They're going to cover up your sleepy little body when you crawl in to that, you just go to Dreamy Town. If you go to mattressfirm.com, you can save 10% with the code PODCAST10 through May 2nd. Mattress Firm offers a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Mattressfirm.com, learn how your sleep can be tremendously improved. Use the code PODCAST10 through May 2nd. Also brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. There's a new boss in town. This is a bacon boss at Buffalo Wild Wings, the Bacon Boss Burger featuring bacon three different ways and a blanket of white cheese sauce, joined by the new favorites like the smothered cheese steak quesadilla, sweet chili shrimp, and Alaska Cod Classic. All pair perfectly with one of the new Izzy Sparkling Juices or Aquafina Water. Hurry in today. Try them before they're all gone. Buffalo Wild Wings available for a limited time while supplies last. Here is the ID10T podcast number 950. It does sounds like a police code.
It does.
Which is perfect.
We got 950.
We got 950 over here. 950. What's 950? Oh, that's when Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy return to the ID10T podcast, formerly the Nerdist podcast. And 95, maybe 951. No. Maybe 950 is roll the thing. We got a 950 here.
Yeah, maybe.
That's going to be very confusing. The next one. Here's the podcast 951. 950. Let's roll that thing right, meow.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Hey,
And he went to Stanford. He went to Stanford.
Yeah. I think he's a smart guy.
I'm just saying.
It was so weird because I felt excited and I was like, I'm so confused. I was just like, I'm really excited about Jerick McKinnon.
Come on.
I had him in fantasy last year. First of all, he can run crazy fast. He can fucking catch. He's like one of the most versatile running backs.
Oh, Katie. He's a backup running back.
No, he's not. He should have been starting.
But is he better than Carlos Hyde? That's the real question.
I think
Carlos Hyde with the Browns. Unbelievable.
Are you talking sports in my house?
We're talking football.
Doing this?
Because she can.
You know the rule.
She can do it.
It's not allowed. Not allowed.
No sports talk.
No sports talk. Save it. Save it for the sports pod.
Yeah. Welcome to No Sports Talk. Yeah. We're not talking sports.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good, man.
Welcome.
Thank you. Are we at liberty to discuss your departure from Nerdist or no?
Yeah, we can talk about whatever you want. I mean, okay.
We were doing that.
Oh, you guys were doing that beforehand.
Yeah, we were talking about it.
Yeah, we were talking about it. I was telling Steve I thought it would be a much more dramatic deal than it was.
Yeah.
I prepared the audience. I'm like, you guys. Okay. You know how sometimes, it's not that I don't love you. Please, sometimes you have to understand. Sometimes you just, like, people change, and by the end of it, everyone was like, yeah, you're just changing the name. It's fine.
Right.
I think the fact that we didn't change the feed and people didn't have to resubscribe and they still get everything and it's still free and I tend to maybe be a little dramatic, but it all worked out fine.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me to hear that, like, along the way before, like when you sold it to Legendary, for instance, that there was more backlash then from fans who were like, wait, man, this was super indie.
No, and again, I thought that would be the case too, but I think, particularly at the time, Legendary was – this was 2012, so they were still, like, in the midst of Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah.
And they had made the Hangover series.
It's still Tommy Tell world.
It was. It was still Tommy Tell.
And Beer Fest. They made Beer Fest.
They made Beer Fest, too. Did. Of course they made Beer Fest. Yeah.
For the catering budget of Superman. But that's okay.
Well, now they have to do Beer Fest Returns.
Yeah, exactly.
That was another thing. But I honestly just think as long as you're communicative with your audience and say, because I said at the time, like, Legendary is buying Nerdist, it's mainly because, I like them as a company. They seem to be fan focused, and also, they're necessary to grow it so we can make more stuff. I don't know if I'll be able to do this without them. And again, people were like, oh, okay, as long as you don't try to pull a fast one on anyone,
forthcoming with everyone,
then I think people are cool. I think they just want to feel communicated with. That's all.
Yeah. People want honesty.
It's almost like they just want you to be straight with them and not try to, to fuck them over in any way.
Yeah.
Because if you are trying to pull a fast one, then that usually means there's an ulterior motive and you're trying to get something and, rather than just...
Yeah.
Sure. Why wouldn't you tell us the truth?
There's no reason at all. Why wouldn't I, rather than just sharing information, and just kind of making it a part of it. I mean, how hardcore are the Broken Lizard fans? Are they pretty hardcore in terms of, like... Do you kind of feel to a degree like, oh, it's not really our thing. It's kind of the audience's thing, and we kind of have to listen to them to how they – or do you just go, oh, this is what it is, guys.
Deal with it. No, I mean, we had that situation that you're talking about because when we crowdfunded the new movie, you got to realize the impact of the fans, right? So, like, they came out in droves and supported the movie, right, in the crowdfunding. But then you had to learn how not to, violate their trust.
Right.
And like you're saying, it was all about as long as you tell them everything that you're doing, they're not going to get pissed off at you.
Right.
Like in the past, there have been crowdfunding, campaigns that, oh, we didn't tell them, but this is what we're really doing or this is what we're really using the money for. Or this is blah, blah, blah. And then they turn on them.
Right.
But, what we learned, I think, was as long as you tell them,
boy, that's so tricky, too, because, and when people get upset – you can get very defensive right away. You're like, why are you getting... But then you realize, like, well, it's only because they care about what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's not, they don't... They get upset not because they hate you. They get upset because they want to love you. Because
they're fans.
Because they're fans.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious to talk about... Because you get that enough just without people giving you money.
Mm-hmm.
But once they give you money, then they really have
they have
a financial ownership in it as well as an emotional ownership in it.
Yeah.
Well, it was cool because, like, I think because – we had this one level of the perks One of them was you could come and for a certain amount of money, you could be an extra on the set and come visit the set.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, those people would come. We'd have them come on the weekends, and I think it was like 100 people at a time. And, you know, I remember the very first weekend that they came, there were 100 people, and it's like, I know, I went out to speak to them. And right off the bat, you know, it was like, hey, listen, we couldn't have made this movie without you guys. I mean, you're actually the people who put the first dollars in. And if it wasn't for you guys, and like you could feel your voice like starting to choke up.
Yeah.
And you're actually like, holy shit, like this is true. This isn't bullshit. But like these people actually made this movie happen.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at a person who – I'm looking at 100 people who cobble together. Like, I mean, some people like missed car payments. Some people, you know, like –
because they wanted to see that movie
so badly. They wanted to see the movie. Yeah. And like, it was unpredictable how emotional, you know, one would become talking to these people. And then it was funny because, like, then you're like, oh, I'm the host here. So they're just kind of looking at me like nobody's going to interrupt me and try to take this over. So I was like, you know, regaling them with stories and everything. And our campaign manager came out in the middle of, like, a great story. And it was like – anybody want to take a picture with Rob Lowe? And everybody turned and bolted. I'm like about to lay down the punchline and like, you know.
Okay, guys, we'll catch up with you later.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool.
But wait, I'm almost done with my story. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, Rob
Shit.
Lowe.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
But, no, but like, you know, I think it's funny too because then people also, they're like, all right, so you're going to make this sequel. You can't fuck it up. So you need to bring the stoners back and you need to do pullovers. And let's see, you got to have the bear fucker and you got to have the German swingers come back.
So just remake the first movie.
But then they're like, but don't just do the same shit you did the first time.
And you're like, I don't sell the same jokes.
Yeah.
Then you're like, all right, I think we're not going to listen to you guys.
So it reminds me of that episode. It reminds me of that episode of the Poochie episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
When they bring the kids in to focus group them. And they're like, who would like to see Itchy and Scratchy and far out worlds and locations? And everyone says, yeah. And like, well, who would like to see Itchy and Scratchy deal with real problems like you face? And they'll go, yeah. And he's like, you don't know what you want.
Yeah.
What do you want? You know, people want the same, but they want different.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And those were the internal conversations we had.
And that was that's the pressure of when they invest in the movie, then you really got to make sure you don't fuck it up.
Right.
You know, because then you lose your fan base. Then they're done.
I don't know if any of the extras are like they're shooting and they just go, excuse me, I hate to interrupt the scene. As an investor, I just wanted to give some notes. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
I mean, you know, that could have easy. We kind of – there's that one scene where we kind of fucked them over in that
we totally fucked them over.
Well, we did. It was a scene where it was like a town hall scene, and they're all in the audience, you know, and there was going to be good time for them to get FaceTime or whatever. And so there was a balcony in the town hall. And so we're like, why don't you put all the guys up in that balcony? And we'll get a nice shot of everyone in the balcony. And so we put them up there, and it ended up being the worst place because they didn't get on camera. And then at one point you went up there, and it was like 150 degrees up there.
Well, that's where the lights were.
Oh, so it turns out you basically just put them in –
we put them with the lights.
Yeah, you just put them in like a 7-Eleven warming hot dog oven.
That's what we did.
Well, my go-to joke with those people is like, you know, I mean, basically you're paying to be part of the worst job on set. And every time I told that, everyone would laugh. They're like, it's true. Being an extra is terrible. But like I tried to pull that with those people up in the balcony, and nobody laughed at that joke. Because, I mean, we wouldn't let them go either.
Yeah.
We were just holding them up there because, you know, we were on a tight shooting schedule.
Still there?
For continuity, they're still there.
Who knows?
Hey, whatever.
Who cares?
Yeah. But in the editing room, we literally went back and put specific shots of them all.
Oh, good, good, good,
on purpose.
Yeah.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
How much? I mean, obviously, this is public information, but how much did you raise with the kicks? How much did you need? And how much did you raise?
Yeah, we had asked for $2 million. And, you know, I think there's a philosophy to it where you ask for just what you need and maybe a little less so that if you achieve better, then it looks great.
Right.
And if you don't achieve that, then, well, I guess you're fucked anyway. Yeah. But we ended up raising $4.5 million.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing. I mean, we met the guy who, like, he did the Veronica Mars campaign. Yeah. He did Reading Rainbow. He's, you know, he's the guru, Ivan Asquith. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
he's the crowdfunding whisperer.
Yeah.
Is what he is.
But even for him, it was kind of like, it's still the great unknown. Because, you know, and so it's like, you don't want to ask for too much because you don't want it to seem unattainable where people are going to be like, oh, they'll never raise that. Why should I bother? You certainly don't.
There's
want
a science
raise,
to it, yeah, which we didn't know anything about.
But they were
we learned.
But, yeah, and he was still figuring it out. But yeah. You know,
and this guy was an MIT guy, number cruncher, and he set the campaign up, and he's an expert in how to do it.
And so, what other things? Just for anyone else who's trying to crowdfund something, was it? It what drives it really? I mean, obviously, the foundation of it. There's a little bit of. You know, in your case, well, people are already fans.
Yep. Yeah.
In some cases, like someone's putting up a thing that no one's ever heard of, so I'm sure that's a whole different set of challenges. But so they're fans, but you also have to create a good presentation,
yep.
A good pitch, and then you have to have, you know, worthwhile tiered perks, I would imagine. So
yeah.
People go, okay, that's worth it. And then is it just constantly being engaged with the audience? What did you learn about that process?
I mean, a lot of it is like anything else in this business, is like it's publicity. It's like people can be fans of yours and they don't know that you're doing this campaign, so they don't go to it. It's like we have this funny thing. Like we'll go do stand-up in a city and you'll run into some guy in a bar. And he's like, oh, my God, I'm the biggest fan, Super Troopers, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing here? It's like, oh, we're doing a stand-up show across the street. They didn't know.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's the same way with this crowdfunding. Is like you could have this fan base, but you have to be able to activate the fan base and you have to be able to push them to where they need to get their information from.
Mm-hmm.
And so honestly, a lot of it was doing publicity. A lot of it was – getting the word out that this campaign exists, and then people go to it.
But you also, and there also is backlash, because, and you know, that's one of the things we talked about in advance, is that like there's going to be a percentage of people who are like, oh, look at these rich Hollywood assholes who are asking us to spend our money instead of spending their money, and you're like, it's not really like we actually can't afford to finance
right.
our own movie,
right?
You know, and
yeah,
and,
not everyone in Hollywood has access to millions.
That's right.
Dollars.
That's right.
Yeah, and so
and if they did, they would invest in a Super Troopers.
Yeah,
that much.
Well,
that's
terrible.
Well, that's what got people nervous. Is they? I think people were worried that the studio system was going to take advantage of Kickstarter.
Yeah,
especially on the heels of the Veronica Mars thing, where they're like, oh, well, studios are just going to exploit people for money that they just don't feel like spending. I mean, you're obviously. Keep your dudes so you're not a giant studio.
Yeah.
But I didn't really get the sense that that ended up happening. Like the studio.
It didn't necessarily. But I think we knew coming up. Like I think Zach Braff had that problem right before we went. And he – I think he raised money with the intention of getting more money from studios and that
right.
kind of stuff. And then – but I think it's the people who contributed didn't understand that. And they thought that, yeah, they took their money and then went to the studios.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were kind of, again, forthcoming to everyone of like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take
yeah.
this money and use it to get the thing going, you know.
And we had, you know, unfortunately for Zach Braff, we had some of his pitfalls to learn from. I mean, and that's what I mean, like sort of like the great unknown. Like each of these successful crowdfunding campaigns were another case study for what we should be doing because there weren't that many of them.
Yeah.
Done at that point. And so, you know.
But the good thing also was the studio wasn't involved with us because they weren't sure if it was going to work.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's why we crowdfunded in the first place. And so I think they were very hands-off in terms of being associated with the movie. And you know, they kind of said, hey, don't, you know, you don't have to say that we're involved here.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think it felt very independent. And then once we raised the money, then the studio was like, hey, maybe you could say that we're involved too.
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
We're in on
well,
this.
Yeah. And then also, you know, in Zach's defense too, because it was still – that was still
so
kind of new,
yeah.
you know, new
yeah.
in terms of
nobody knew.
Raising money on that scale. But, you know, it's not like – you know, it's not like, oh, everyone just has millions of dollars that they can spend. And it's not even just the money part, but being able to raise the financing yourself allows you a lot of creative control.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a large reason why a director, writer, director, creator would want to do it. And so, you know, I don't think, specifically in his case, I don't think he was like, I can't wait to take
yeah,
advantage of, you
not
know.
Not at all.
It wasn't that at all. It was like, oh, this seems like a way that I can raise enough money to be able to have the creative control to prove that there's an audience for this. And then, I don't know, maybe it just... something went a little screwy.
It's also like just not the perception of the people. Like,
right.
The, you know, I think that was something that none of us never had.
You were on
understood.
A hit show. You probably have $50 million. Why are
yeah.
you? And the truth is not everyone on a show has $50 million. It's just
yeah.
the economics of it. I mean, I think what people, what a lot of, I'm not asking you to feel sorry for anyone who works in the entertainment business, you know, because we're all privileged, very privileged people. But, you know, as you guys know, about 80% of everything you make goes to other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 50% of it goes to taxes.
Yeah.
25% goes to representatives. Another 5% can go to like publicists and, you know, whatever. And so, you know, I always make the joke, like, if you want to make a shit ton of money, you have to make a fuck ton of money.
Yeah.
And so the numbers involved with getting rich in the entertainment business are have to be so astronomically high just because there's just so many people that take pieces of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, and that's, I'm not crying about it. I'm just saying that's just the reality.
And also, I think people don't necessarily appreciate the way the financing of film distribution works either, where like people were for years where it's like, hey, just, you know, raise like $1 million and go shoot the movie. Put it out yourself.
Come on.
You know what I mean? Like, just do it.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, first of all, like in today's day and age, it takes like at least $10 to $15 million to distribute a movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
On top of what it costs to make the movie, the P&A, you have to go raise this amount of money in order to make that in the system. And so I think people don't appreciate, you know, the amount of money that you need to do in order to push the ball. And so,
which is what basically is like getting into theaters and marketing and all that
advertising
stuff.
You know, the spending on advertising is, you know, and there's so much stuff in the market these days where it's like the weekend we come out, which is April 20th, it's like The Rock has a movie the weekend before, and then The Avengers comes out the weekend after. You know what I mean? So just to sneak in there and try to make some noise, you have to spend some money.
But I think Super Troopers 2 is excellent counter-programming for that stuff. You know, especially because you might also benefit from the spillover of sold-out Avengers screenings.
And we're looking forward.
We're hoping for that.
Yeah, we're looking forward to this. Like, oh, I can't go see Avengers. Oh, that's Super Troopers.
Come on. Let's go see that.
Yeah, in the theater.
But originally it was us versus The Rock. Rampage was going to be on April 20th.
Got it.
And then
– and you got scared, right?
Avengers, yeah.
He smelled what the Broken Lizard was cooking.
That's right.
Yeah. Took him out.
It smelled good. No, but like –
they got afraid of Avengers.
Avengers moved up one week.
Right.
And so Rampage moved, and then we were sitting all alone there.
Yeah, for a minute. And then Amy Schumer jumped on our weekend because she was scared of something. I don't know what she was scared of, but
Avengers.
Like, yeah, they jumped on ours.
It is really and I think it's hard for people to really understand because the entertainment business does not work like any other conventional business.
Yeah.
And so people just think very linearly, like, you raise the money, you make it, and then it's awesome.
Right.
Like, no, there's so many structures.
You buy cars.
There's so many structures in place. Like, here's an analogous example. A lot of times people go, hey, you know, instead of touring where, you know, you have to go to a theater where you have to go to Ticketmaster where we have to pay all these fees, why don't you just – like rent a space in our town and just go you go, okay,
I know a theater,
but you have to understand, like, you would have to cover the insurance, you have to cover all the ticketing costs, you have to cover the, you know, if it's a union house, you have to cover all the union fees for the house. And so it's almost financially oppressive that only like the top handful of performers can actually
do that,
can really do it.
Yeah.
Or you just have to jump down to just go perform in a bar.
Right.
You know, like where you can just roll into a bar and then it's easy. Like, just go do your thing over there.
Sure.
But if you want to do it in any kind of an organized way, it's surprisingly more complicated than you just think. Like, oh, the internet, you just do that. Like, not everything just works that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, that was one thing we got was another version, which is, why don't they just raise $1 million like the first one and just do it without the studio? But the fact is, the studio owned it. Like, we couldn't do that. People say, why don't they take it to another studio? We're like, well, no, because the studio owns it.
We can't. They don't just give you.
Yeah, we can't. They won't, and they've said that they will never let Super Troopers free to go to another studio.
Which is funny, isn't it, too? Because you get frustrated because you think of – I mean, obviously, big studios, businesses don't really operate like people. And so a person would go, well, if I'm not going to use this, I'll just give this to you because – but a studio's like, no. Are you ever going to make this? No. Well, can I have it? No.
No.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to – they don't want to give up any IP. They're not in the business of giving up IP. And on a certain level, if they give it up and then you go make $100 million with it, then a bunch of people get fired. Like, how did you let this go?
Who made that decision?
Yeah. So they just studios and companies are just not in the habit of just handing over IP, even if they don't ever intend to use it.
Yeah, and then the truth is, in terms of even what we were raising for the campaign, was that they said, we'll allow you to do this if you raise the production money, also the P&A money, which was not something we mentioned while we were doing the crowdfunding campaign. And they set certain floors. I won't say what the floors were, but they were well above what we were asking for. And so, in fact, to the tune of some pretty like, I mean, the P&A budget is oftentimes
just
bigger
tell
than
what
the
P&A is.
Yeah. Print and advertising, yeah. Which is literally the print is the copy of the movie, but it's the advertising.
It is those distribution costs. You know, it's like advertising, and yeah. Prints, and theaters, yeah. And
that's that why. Stuff. That's why, like. You never can look at the budget of a movie like a $5 million. Like when Get Out came out, I think Get Out was probably around a $5 million movie.
Yeah,
like oh, $5 million movie made you know $250 million, which it still is way profitable. But it probably costs like I'm guessing $25 or $30 million.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like once it seemed to be trending in the direction of like, oh, people seem to be interested in this, and they start putting a little more and more money into it to promote it. And then all of a sudden it's like now they've spent five times,
yeah.
You know, the amount of what the movie costs just to make sure that
sure.
People know about it.
Just to make
it.
A splash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also a reality to crowdfunding, which we only discovered once we had done it, which is that whatever you gross in the money raise – a lot of that is still going to go to satisfying the perks that are mm-hmm. going to be made for the backers. Also, you know, paying for the manpower. Also, you know, we were getting close to the end of the year, and we still hadn't raised the rest of the money to shoot the film. And then the news was broken to us, like, no, you have to shoot this thing, otherwise the government is going to take half of this.
You
money.
Just pay taxes on that crowdfunding.
Oh thing. Shit!
Yeah. So it's like if you don't spend it before the year's over, then you're giving it back.
And
to
when
the government.
Did you find that out?
We found it out. We found out
December
after
1st.
The raise.
Yeah,
after raise, and it was like it was around September or something like that. I was like, "Shit, we gotta go
Holy
start
shit.
Moving."
Oh my god!
Yeah, and so we went and we shot like the first 8 days of the movie, and you know spent a good amount of that money so that we didn't lose it to taxes.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's crazy.
Well, this is the amazing thing.
That's the shit you learn that you don't know.
Yeah, and it goes back to the fan who's like,
gonna pay taxes? Oh shit.
Why don't you go to like Richard Branson and just get him to finance it?
Hey,
or something like that.
He's got billions of dollars.
Yeah.
What's $5 million?
Yeah, like even with the success of the crowdfunding campaign, you know, the studio was now very much aware of the movie and okay, the fans are out there again, but we could not find investors. And so it wasn't until we actually shot the movie, put the footage together, which basically turned out to be like the first 20 pages of the movie, and then started showing it around, that then investors started showing up the following year, and we were able to put the money.
And what was it that the investors needed specifically, and how did showing them footage get them on board?
I think just the excitement of seeing that was funny.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It wasn't old or retread or that there was something to it that they thought, you know, like anything else, they want to make it.
Which is not surprising. I mean, yeah. When we shot the first one, the script to all the major studios, George Clooney was one of our executive producers. And he had us in there with the president of every studio. And they would say, well, first they would say like, so is George going to be in the movie? And we're like... Unfortunately,
no, he's not.
And they're like, okay, and how much you guys want? $5 million. And who's acting in it? We are. And who's directing it? I am. You know? And then they would say,
but you did it once already.
Yeah. Well, no, but this is the first one. And they would say, look at this scene here. It's all these guys saying meow to each other.
Oh, right, gotcha.
We don't. That's funny. Like we don't.
Oh, you have to see it.
And I mean, literally, and that's just what happens. Is people read your script and they're like, And the deal was actually pretty good for investors.
Right.
It was a really good deal for investors.
For the second one,
yeah. Now. And we'd show it to these guys and say quite frankly to their faces, you're never going to get a deal this good again. If you're in independent film financing, this is the best offer you're ever going to get. And I stand by that. I think it's true. And everybody, P&A people too, just said no.
But the interesting thing about that was because the landscape had changed, right? So the first Super Troopers made the bulk of its money on DVDs. You know,
yeah.
Now the DVD market doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So the studios were like, okay, let's look at let's see. So it made all the money in this column. This column doesn't exist, and we haven't figured out how to fill that gap yet. Whether it's you know on demand or whatever, they just don't make the same kind of money as they did in DVD.
Right.
And so to them, that money stream is gone. And so as they're making a decision whether to do the sequel, they take that into consideration.
So they figure they go, well, how are people gonna? Because I'm sure it's probably not. Great for them financially if people are getting all their stuff through, I don't know, iTunes or Amazon or whatever. I'm sure those companies are taking a nice chunk of that for putting it on their – streaming on their platforms.
Yeah. But in DVD world, they would make a DVD for like 15 cents
right.
And they sell it for $20.
Right.
And then they make a shitload of money off
right.
of it, you know. And so that stream doesn't exist anymore. And so what are they going to do? And are they going to make a bet on us? With that stream gone? Yeah, that's the question.
The DVD guys?
Yeah. And so I was like, well, let's go. So that was what the crowdfunding thing was. Let's go crowdfunding and prove that the audience is out there. And that's what ended up working.
Yeah, it's worked out. But like, I mean,
and it's all good because the movie got made.
The movie got made. But, you know, but all the way through, I mean, I think three different times the plug, nobody knew this, but the plug almost got pulled because there's always some shuckster out there who says he's got the money for you. And,
right.
And you're rolling forward. And then at the last second, they're like, they're essentially saying, we thought we could have raised the money. This independent financier is like, I thought I could have done it, but I can't do it. So I'm pulling out. And all of a sudden you're $2 million short again. And you're like, if we don't raise $2 million by tomorrow, we're going to pack it up and go home. And somebody's going to have to go to Rob Lowe's trailer and say, hey, sorry. This was a tremendous waste of time. Yeah. That happened a few times.
Someone's going to have to pull him out of his oxygen chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever's keeping him beautiful.
Because he's beautiful.
He's stunning.
He is. He told me his secret, though.
What?
He said, we rolled into an ADR session. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning. And we looked like shit. And he looked great. Like he came in, he looked great. And we're like, what's your thing? How do you do this? He said, you don't know my secret? 10 hours of sleep a night.
What?
10 hours of sleep a night. That's what he said.
I can't sleep more than 4. What am I supposed to do?
I know, but that's his thing.
Yeah.
He said, hey, make the 10 hours for yourself and you'll look like this.
Yeah, you should also have told him, you should have been like, it also helps to be born looking like motherfucker.
Yeah. Maybe he wasn't.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't.
Having porcelain jeans is also very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, back in the Pony Boy days, maybe that's true. Now, I mean, I don't know. You
God
know,
damn it.
He is still very good looking.
He's so good looking. Yeah.
You just reminded me too. Fuck. I think I've been doing a joke with Meow in it. God damn it.
We didn't corner the market on Meow jokes.
I just want you to know that. Now I have an ethical problem if I keep doing this joke or not. Mm. It's basically about how I've been, like when I first started dating my wife, the cat didn't like me.
Yeah.
And he would throw up on my feet. And so it just kind of goes to this thing about how she leaves and he throws up my feet and then he paces back and forth, but it ends with him going, where's your God, Meow?
But you know what? And you've been forthcoming with us.
I was. See? Oh, my God. You just brought it back.
Yeah.
You just brought it back to what we were talking about right at the beginning.
Honesty.
You have to use blessing.
That's what
yeah.
I crowdfunded the
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, this world where people do have the ability to reach their audience directly. And also, like, this hybrid version of, like, well, we're working with fans, but we're also working with corporate structures.
Yeah.
And how do we keep everybody happy? I mean, we are still in this strange frontier of it all. And is it something that you would do again? Or do you feel like, that whole process was too stressful that way?
It was pretty grueling. And
I mean, whatever, all in context. I mean,
Well, that's what
we're digging ditches, but it was like, you know.
That's what happens. It's like this douchey Hollywood thing. It's like you sit there and grouse about how hard you're working, how hard you're begging. That's basically what it is. And all, I mean, because one of the things.
But also what you're promising. You know, it's like, you know, the amount of time and things that you do to meet the obligations can become too expensive. You know,
right,
I mean, it becomes
right.
not, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we tried, you know, we did try to not just beg. Like, we looked at various campaigns. And so, like, some people would just put up one video and be like, hey, give us money.
Right.
And we actually, we specifically said, let's put something new up every single day. And so, you know, we filmed that over the course of a few days. But, like, there was a new like, vignette every single day for the campaign.
For all 30 days?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But also, I mean, we made deals, like we made a deal with Fandango where people could actually buy an advance ticket to the movie, which
is cool.
A new thing. Like people hadn't done that before.
Yeah, that was a partnership
with
Fandango.
It was actually like you're actually getting a little something for your, you know.
The perks were good. I mean, you know, it was surprising though. Like we offered, I think was it $35,000 for the squad car?
Yeah.
And that went in the first few hours.
Holy shit.
Which was shocking. We had a $25 million prize where we would we would sire a child.
Didn't work out.
Nobody bought that one.
Crazy. Nobody bought it.
No.
Well, they were concerned because you wouldn't know who the real father was.
It'd be one
of five guys.
Yeah, yeah. In advance,
and if the kid came out Indian, you'd know who it was. Or if the kid was fat, you know who it was.
Well, we wondered if what would happen if you shook it up, like if it would come out like short, fat, and brown.
Mix all.
Yeah, mix all together.
Just,
yeah. See what happens.
A hideous.
Didn't happen.
No, we bought it. Broken lizard, Frankenstein monster. Yeah.
It would have been hideous.
I'm sure someone out there is like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm gonna, I don't know who this character is, by the way.
Yeah.
I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to wait until after the movie's done. I'm going to fuck those guys for free.
Yeah, that's what I'm going
to
do.
I don't need to pay them $25 million.
I'll have that baby.
I don't give a shit.
It all fucks.
Hey. Oh, come on. Anybody wants a shot at this?
Yeah, come on.
Come on.
But I mean, you know, too. I mean, you walk that tightrope too of fandom and corporate structure and, you know, how to get the word out and stuff out there.
But it's rare that I've ever, I mean, you know, I mean, I guess when you perform live, you're asking people for money because they're paying to come see a show. But in terms of, you know, like I've always wanted the podcast to be free.
Yeah.
And even if I ever did a premium version of the podcast that like didn't have ads or anything, sponsorships and anything in it, I would never take away the free version from people because I just, you know, I think there's a difference between seeing people as like a well of money to try to dig out of and then seeing your community of fans as like, okay, well, if you want me to make this, then I need this to make this. And if you don't want that, no problem.
Yeah.
But just not, I think it really boils down to like just not looking at them as wallets or.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the great thing is going around and being able to meet the people. Like, I don't know if you remember this. There was that one time we were coming from a show. We're walking through an airport. It was probably in Chicago or Detroit, like somewhere really fucking cold. And we're walking through one of those one of those airport hallways. And all of a sudden, like the door opens from the outside, and the fucking wind blows in, and some guy comes in one of those like snow covered. The guy who was on the tarmac, you know, like the baggage, whatever it is, and he walks in and he looks at us. He goes, "Oh my God, you guys!" And we're like, "Hey!" And he goes, "I donated to your campaign. I'm so excited for the movie." Shit. And you're like, "Holy shit." And here's a guy, you know, works hard. He's out in the fucking cold and he comes in, but still he contributed to your campaign. You know?
Yeah.
And those are the moments you're like, "Holy shit. Thank you." And that's an amazing connection.
It's the one thing Noddy prepared us for was that moment that happens over and over again. You know, whether it's 100 people showing up on the set or that guy.
Yeah.
It happens a lot now in the most random places, the most random people. Literally, I mean, they just come up to you and say it.
And that's the beauty of the crowdfunding thing is to run into these people who, you know, they're your fans and they want to be a part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the great thing.
And you know, I mean, it's funny. It's like we do a meet and greet after every one of our live shows and the people come to the shows and then they're always there. You know, there's a bunch of people online who, you know, I'll see them talking to Kevin and then he'll say, "Indiegogo." And then you're like, "Hey!" And you feel, I mean, you're connected to them. You're really connected to them.
Well, yeah, because it is, you know, it's amazing enough if someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, I really like your thing." You're like, "Oh my God, that was so nice. Thank you for saying that." But it's another thing if someone is going to separate themselves from their very hard-earned money and go, "I believe in you this much you know, whatever I had, even if it was like 10 bucks here, you know, I mean, that's an incredible statement, especially in this world where so many different things are asking people for their money, and it's so easy to spend money now with just your goddamn phone in your pocket.
And there's so much different entertainment that you can get and different ways that you know, whatever, make yourself happy.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've had people who are like, we gave multiple times. You know, I would get my paycheck and put this much money, as much as I could, down, and then, you know, a couple weeks later, I get this paycheck, I put a little more down, and you're like, "Oh my God, I can't hear this anymore. Like, this is, it's breaking my heart."
It's
it's unbelievable.
So we spent 100 grand in the movie and got $4 million worth of great blowjobs in Amsterdam.
Yeah, boom. Yeah. Thank you for your money. Thank you for your contribution.
Well, but the problem is, you know that's the insidious side of crowdfunding is shit like that has happened, and so I'm sure it's not. You know, I'm sure the Kickstarter and Indiegogo and places like that have, you know, figured out as much as they can how to dissuade that kind of, you know, that kind of behavior.
We heard stories about people got sued, who didn't, you know, meet their obligations, and they took the money and went and did something else. I mean, that stuff happens, you know.
Yeah. But thanks. I mean, you know, one of our philosophies always has been, I mean, our producer, Rich Perrello, is the guy who produced all of our movies. And I mean, he runs a morally tight ship.
Good.
And it's really important because, you know, in the film industry, there are a million productions that have people, I mean, they die because of these, you know, investors that haven't been properly vetted, or, you know, or they're promising one thing over here, saying, "Hey, I got this guy, give me some money." I mean, we have run into that.
Sure.
But thankfully, we run a very righteous ship, and I think that that
says
helps
you.
Us.
Yeah. Says you, Lemmy.
Oh, hey.
Hey, come on.
Yeah. Hey, when are you going to put this sperm in me?
Yeah, come on.
We're going after
Let's go. Come on, let's make me a baby.
I think it was the same guy.
Same guy. Yeah, totally. Might be a girl. I don't know. Might be a girl.
Yeah. Think of the same guy, lady.
Yeah. Who could be? Could be. I don't know.
You know, we're not trying to.
Who knows? Who cares?
Yeah, it's not important. It's not important to the story.
It doesn't. It's the money that counts.
It's the money and the sperm.
And the sperm. Yeah.
And mixing it all together. What do you get? Broken lizard cocktail, baby. That's all.
But luckily, it's good. The movie came out. Katie Levine saw a rough cut, right? Good, right?
Great.
You know that could. Oh, did you see the rough cut?
Yeah.
I just got it sent to me like a day ago.
Oh, you did?
Oh, I'm gonna watch it too.
Somebody sent you the movie?
You've got the final cut.
Oh, I do have the final cut.
Oh, wow, yeah. Good for you, man.
The next Broken Lizard movie, by the way, is that all that one person is like, okay, I want to have a baby, and I'm going to give all of you guys a shot at it.
Right.
And you all just compete for whoever the dad is.
Who's the most virile.
Yeah, who's the virile. And even afterwards, you don't know until the baby's born. That's right. Kind of the reveal.
Yeah.
It's like a reality show.
Yeah,
a reality
show. Exactly.
I would win.
What?
I'm like Luke Skywalker with the Death Star, like one shot, boom.
Oh, right in the air vent.
Pregnant,
yeah.
Boom,
yeah.
Pregnant.
Bam. Yeah. That's your special power.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like 10 for 10.
Right. Yeah. So you've had sex 10 times.
I have, and every time.
Kids. Every time they're pregnant.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I'm the guy who gets blown up as he's,
pull out.
Well,
is that Porkins?
Yeah, I think it's Porkins. Actually, somebody sent me.
Porkins.
The Porkins, so like terrible. A Porkins poster. With Farva's face on the Porkins thing. It's like the Porkins with the helmet. You know what I mean? It's like Porkins.
So
like,
of it. Thank you?
And I was like, okay. I'll take it.
Thank you, man.
Certainly an iconic moment from my childhood.
Yeah.
I gave it to you.
When does the movie actually come out? As you said, I know it's the Avengers. Oh, so it's
420.
April. 420. Oh, my
See?
God.
See? Clever. That was Fox's idea, 420.
You guys.
But
They came up with that idea last year when the movie was completed.
Right. We finished the movie last summer.
Uh-huh.
And then they're like, we had a great idea. 420 falls on a Friday in 2018.
Oh.
And we're like, yeah, but that's 8 months from now.
But 2018 is
let's do it.
Next year.
Let's do it. And they're like, okay. And we're like, all right. And we're like, But it turned out to be kind of the right thing. Because
it's nice. It's a holiday weekend for us, basically. They've created a holiday weekend event.
But also, we're the redheaded stepchild of Fox Searchlight. Like, Fox Searchlight, they have all their award movies, Shape of Water and Three Billboards. Those are all their movies. And they have to do
Shape of Masturbating and Water.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they have to do all that shit. Up the award seasons, and we do get lost in the show. Now they're done with the award seasons, and we're sitting here.
That's what's so great is that there are probably no expectations, you know, like in the sense of, hey, you know what, you guys raised a chunk of the money. They're so focused on other stuff.
Yeah.
But if your movie sneaks through and makes $100 million, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hey, nice
good for
job.
Them. I mean, I know that that's been happening. You know, we released the trailer, and it got 50 million views in a week.
Jesus.
Which was something that caught everybody by surprise.
Right, I mean, including Fox.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. It's ludicrous that should happen. But, like, I think the biggest thing is that they are – it's almost like the movie Room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they – get released, you know, they're
after award season.
Well, it's like they do Guillermo del Toro movies, mm-hmm. and like all these very classy highbrow projects. Cut to us with the Searchlight PR team at WWE 2 days ago, front row in Indianapolis, and like the PR girls, they're like, this is the best.
Yeah.
Look at Randy Orton's thighs.
By the way, let's just take a step back though. You said very classy, and I'm not gonna take away from what you said, but Super Troopers, movie about a bunch of cops coming together to do a thing.
Yeah.
Shape of Water, lady fucks a swamp monster.
Right.
Yeah. So what sounds classier on paper?
You're right.
If you're thinking about
fish
it.
Fish fucking or...
In fact, you're...
fish fucking or Super Troopers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, America's law enforcement or fish fucking.
Yeah, or fucking. Grinding Nemo is what it's been called. Nemo. Grinding Nemo.
Grinding Nemo.
Yeah. No, it's true. Hey, look, Slumdog, we got slammed. We always get slammed. They're like, oh, yeah, potty humor. It's masturbation. It's shit jokes. We haven't done one shit joke. Slumdog Millionaire, that kid wound up.
Fox Searchlight movie.
Fox Searchlight movie. He wound up like in an outhouse covered in shit, and it won an Oscar.
Yeah. So
we've never done a shit joke.
You know, funny thing, remember this weekend, or this past couple days ago, we were doing a WWE cross-promotion event in Indianapolis, and they sent our uniforms out there, right? So we're putting our uniforms on. We're in the locker room putting our uniforms on to do something with the WWE guys. And the Fox people are there, and we're like, I bet Doug Jones didn't bring his fish suit around. Is that his name, Doug Jones?
Doug Jones, yeah.
Yeah, didn't bring his fish suit with him. And they're like, as a matter of fact, he did.
Yep.
He brought his fish suit with him on all the promotional events, and he puts it on.
He puts it on.
Really?
Oh, wow.
We didn't know that. Really?
Oh, so he does all makeup. We just put on the...
For the fish suit, and then he gets laid.
Yeah.
Then he gets action.
Yeah.
So let me just pitch another idea to you guys, but I'm sure this has been pitched to you a million times before you've thought about it. This is for the third installment.
Okay.
Super Troopers.
Yeah.
Meets Reno 911.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
We can do that.
Just the mashup.
We put the shorts on.
You and then
the dangle shorts, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He wears the short shorts.
Yeah.
Dangle wears the short shorts. Yeah. I feel like for because in this world of bringing in the tying all the Avengers movies, like all the universes together.
Yeah.
I think
the cop comedy universe thing.
That would be like Avengers versus X-Men.
Sure.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Sure.
It needs it. It wants it.
And it. I think. And how do you escalate it? How do you, how do you keep escalating? It's not like you can go, well, the third one, they're in space, or they go to Europe or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like it's gotta be a Super Troopers versus Reno 911.
It could be a great crossover thing. I'm open to that.
Yeah.
I'm open to that.
And we visit, we go up to a log cabin to visit our mentors. It's the police academy guys.
Oh, shit!
Yeah.
God damn it, you just fucking, God damn it, it's Michael Winslow
making sounds.
There he is. Fucking Gutenberg is Mahoney. Right. Yeah. Jesus Christ, you just blew my goddamn mind.
There it is. No, that was a group effort. That was a group effort.
God damn it. The bummer part about that is that this kind of an idea, just to let people know how things work, and I'm 100% serious that you should try to do this, but you get lawyers on the phone, and these are lawyers who couldn't give a shit about any of these properties.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And they'll be like, well, no, we should own the whole thing. You didn't even care about this before we talked about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Don't you just want cool things to exist?
No, they'll just kill it dead.
No, it'll die in the BA floor.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Well, ultimately, you have to have the studio do it. That's what happened was when we did Beer Fest, and at the end of Beer Fest, we made a joke, coming soon, Pot Fest.
Right.
And so it was just a joke that we put there because Willie Nelson's in the last scene with us, and that was a funny joke, haha. And then after the movie came out, we started getting all these phone calls from people that they wanted to know if it was real. And we're talking about like people like Snoop Dogg and Cheech and Chong and 50 Cent.
50, yeah.
Woody Harrelson and Willie, and they're like, are you guys really making this movie? Because let's get together and let's all make this movie.
And they're like, really? It never happened.
And because Warner Brothers owned the idea.
Oh.
And Warner Brothers is make pop movies.
Got it.
And this is like pre-Hangover, so like they didn't even make rated R movies then. They made Harry Potter and whatever it was. So, and then we ended up...
Harry Potter in it, technically.
I know, Harry Potter.
You're right.
Then we sold another version of it to Universal, and they couldn't get it past their corporate structure, so it ended up just kind of falling by the wayside.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
It's been fun. It's a cannonball run of pop movies.
But if Super Troopers 2 does well at the box office, then I think there'll probably be some conversations.
It's a new culture these days,
Everything's changed.
New weed culture these
days. Yeah, since we've had those talks.
Yeah.
And we'll see. But it's funny, too, because now, literally we're in the press ramp up for Super Troopers 2, and on Twitter, it's just like, okay, but when's Pot Fest coming out? We're like, dude, it's taken us 10 years to get this movie made.
People are
like,
good enough.
Well, how about Pot Fest? We're like, I don't know. Okay,
sure. It was really hard to make this one. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
What's the next thing coming?
I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I haven't even seen it yet. I don't care.
You just said you were going to make it.
Do it.
It's like at the end of History of the World Part 1, they tease History of the World Part 2.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks never made it.
I know.
I always wanted to see Jews in space.
Me too.
Yeah.
They never made it.
Should have.
Does the flying star of David Starcraft?
Yeah.
Remember the...
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually have been watching Spaceballs lately in my house.
Oh, yeah? With the kids?
With the 3-year-old and the 6-year-old.
Okay.
And they're into it. And it's such a reminder of how lovely a person Mel Brooks is. I see him at my local steakhouse. I've got a local steakhouse out there in the valley.
Right.
And I see him, a few booths down every now and then.
Right.
And it's like... It's just—it's a magical thing.
Can I show you something? And I've never done this before, but I'm going to run upstairs on the podcast, and I'm going to because I want to—I feel like I want to show this to you.
Okay. Should we talk amongst ourselves?
Is he going to walk in here with the Rick Moranis helmet on or no?
Oh my! The giant Rick Moranis helmet.
Yeah, the giant the black helmet.
You know what we should do though? Yeah. Is just talk mad sports while he's gone.
This is when Katie Levine gets to break out. Hardwick's gone.
Okay.
Katie Levine can talk about sports as much as she wants to talk about sports.
Got it. I mean, the running backs are moving all over the NFL.
I love it.
All over the NFL.
I know.
I truly love it.
I know.
It's not going to be any way that, it's not the same player.
The Giants just signed Jonathan Stewart. I'm not excited.
That's fine, but, Browns are getting Carlos Hyde.
I know it.
Frank Gore, is Frank Gore going someplace?
Detroit. He's letting me. Okay. And so then, yeah, so then the Lando. San Francisco 49ers said, hey.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, it is.
Look at that.
Holy crap. I was joking that might be. Oh, wow.
Wait a second.
Signed by Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
And my. Is that the real one?
Yes.
That's the real one?
Yes.
Signed by Mel Brooks and Rick Moranis.
I bought it at an auction last year, and Mel's son Max is a friend of mine. I said, oh, I'm trying to buy Dark Helmet at an auction. He goes,
oh, my God.
Oh, if you get it, I'll get my dad to sign it.
Oh,
and
my
so,
God.
And then when Mel signed it, then Rick had been on the podcast, so I reached out to him when I was going to New York, and he was like, sure, and he came and signed it too. So.
Oh, my God. I need to take a picture of you with that on your head.
Sure,
with
you on that head.
Well, I'm definitely going
to
do that.
Now, so it's not the kind of thing that you can, you can't mail that to Rick Moranis. You have to arrange a meeting for Rick Moranis to come and put that. Sign that.
Yes, I traveled with it.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I can't believe you just walked out. I was like, oh, I just got Rick Moranis' helmet up there or something. Yeah. And then boom.
I mean, that's an iconic piece of
cinema
history.
It's in really good shape, too.
How many, I mean, I don't mean to, but how many of those think were made? Like, probably like three or four of them ever were sitting there up there in the air?
I honestly think it might just be the one.
Really?
Because you can see that, I mean, you can see the inside of the, that it was, it's been worn.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard, and you see how it's all set up and the gaff tape and everything.
Yeah.
I really don't think there were, I think this might have been it.
So now, okay, so you purchased that at an auction, you say?
Yeah.
And then what happens next? Like, you go home with it. How many days do you wear that? Do you wear it out in public?
On Halloween, if you wear it on Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, what happens next?
In sexual situations with the wife.
Yeah. Okay, come on.
Does she put it on?
She puts
it
on. Put the helmet on, baby.
Because that's really
baby,
what you
put the helmet on.
Right?
Yeah. Baby, put the helmet on.
Yeah.
Just lift it up and say you can't breathe in this thing. Please, come on. Yeah.
Do I have to do it again? Yeah. Do I have to?
Please.
Come on.
Ludicrous speed. Please, just say ludicrous speed.
Yeah.
I mean, now it's in a box, but because I'm trying to figure out how to display it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's a company that makes some props that we've bought some movie props from, and I showed it to them, and they go, we can make a bust of Rick Moranis' head.
That's perfect.
And display it on that, so you could keep it closed, but if you flip it up, then you just see his face underneath. So I think that might be the way to go, but it ultimately should be, like in a display case.
Yeah.
Sure.
And now how many times have you say this is the first time you've busted this out on the podcast
Well, it's the first time that I've left the podcast microphones to go do something.
Go get it.
Right.
But you mentioned Spaceballs and it was one floor up. So I had to bring it.
Right.
I had to bring it down. Yeah, it is. It's kind of funny. But this kind of ties back into the idea of fandom because if you're around our age, this helmet means so much
to
a certain sector of us. But anyone else would be like, what the fuck would you pay money for that for? Like anyone else would just have no concept of what this is or why. Yeah. Why
I think Spaceball gets better with age, by the way.
Yeah.
It's great.
I really, like watching it with my kids, I was like, I hadn't watched it in a long time.
Right.
And it was so much better than I remembered it being.
You still have a thing for Daphne Zuniga or what?
I mean, Daphne's it started with The Sure Thing.
Of course.
Daphne Zuniga.
Of course it started with The Sure Thing.
For me, she was spectacular.
Sure.
She is spectacular.
Sure.
And then when she joined the Screen Actors Guild, I was like, the board. I'm thinking of Gabriella Carteris.
Don't get mixed up.
Did you start showing up to SAG meetings all of a sudden? Like,
hey, yes, Daphne Zuniga.
But I was just curious if I could ask.
Well, that actually happened when we were making The Slam and Salmon.
Yeah.
The SAG strike was looming.
Right.
And the writer's strike was ongoing at that moment, and we had Morgan Fairchild in the movie, and she was on the Screen Actors Guild board.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was telling me – we were on set. She was telling me about all the sort of like the ins and outs of the looming strike and everything.
Couldn't have been more boring.
Yeah, so boring.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, we're rolling. And so we had to whisper then. And so she continued talking about the strike to me, but in my ear very quietly. And I could feel her hot breath.
Morgan Fairchild.
Yeah, and her lips sometimes would touch my earlobe. And it was lucky. I mean, we were playing waiters, so I had a check presenter tucked into my apron.
Sure, of course, yeah.
Which was, keeping me at bay, but it was a hot moment.
I mean, that is one of the – there's just kind of weird moments like that where you're like, is this real? Am I alive? Is this really a thing, or did I die?
That was one. And when we made Club Dread, when Bill Paxton tapped me on the shoulder, and I looked at him, and he was like – he indicated to me to look down. I looked down, and his dick was out. and he said, and he goes, "Beef, it's what's for dinner." And at that moment, I was like,
doing a Sam Elliott impersonation.
Yeah, Sam Elliott.
Who he was in Tombstone with.
Yeah.
God damn it.
And at that moment, I was like, I was saying to myself, when I was like 15, 16 years old, watching Weird Science and loving Chet.
Yeah.
Loving Chet. Did I ever think, like, 25 years from now or whatever, I'm going to look at his dick. I'm going to be staring, and he's going to say, Beef, it's what's for dinner.
And he's going to be doing a bit.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not just looking at it.
Yeah.
There's a bit.
It's the main character in his bit.
Now, my question is, if you, because I've never done a dick bit like that, where it's just that.
Sure.
So what's the dismount, right? So once you go, Beef, it's what for dinner, do you guys go, aha? But then he still has to, like, tuck it away and zip up the, like, what's the dismount?
Yeah, so
that?
Anyway,
politics. Am I right or whatever?
Yeah.
This one is that he pulls out his dick. Yeah. He pulls out his dick and then matches it, right?
Yeah. Well, Beef, what's for dinner was our running.
Sure. Then that became our running line for the whole shoot.
Yeah. Know? Then it would probably I would be like, well, that doesn't look like dinner. That's more like an appetizer. And we'd get childish like that.
Sure.
Yeah. And then you'd blow each other. Or sure, whatever.
Bada bing, bada
boom. Or whatever.
Or whatever. Happens.
What happens on a set stays on a set.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't kiss
Beef
and tell.
Beef is literally for dinner.
Yeah.
Beef is literally for dinner.
Yeah. I cut off his dick and I ate it.
Oh my God. Wait.
I ate it.
Took a total other turn.
Yeah. No, I ate it.
I had no. Yeah. Okay. So that's confirming that.
It was delicious.
Oh my God. Well, at least it was good.
Yeah. It was delicious.
That was your holy shit moment. Right?
That was a holy shit moment.
I can't believe I'm with this guy. Mine was, one of mine was, Beer Fest. Donald Sutherland was in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And he has a small part in the beginning of the movie, and you know, does Donald Sutherland, love him for, you know, MASH and Animal House, whatever,
everything.
Love the guy. And so he came to the set. He only shot for one day, and we were doing the scene, and he didn't understand. Like, he couldn't figure it out in his mind. He's an actor, you know, and he couldn't quite figure out the dialogue. And so he said, "Who wrote this?" And then I walked over. I was like, "Well, I did." And he said, "What does this mean?" And I said, "Well," and I told him, "Well, it means," and I started saying the dialogue. He goes, "Don't you give me a line read. Tell me what it means." And at that point, I was like, "Fuck you, you fucking asshole." And he proceeded to be a prickly dick the whole day. And in my mind, I'm like, "God damn it, I love Donald Sutherland. What happened?" And
so your moment was, your moment was getting shit from...
Yeah, for Donald Sutherland.
Which is still kind of a badge of honor in a weird sort of way.
It was good because
he was showing you his emotional dick.
It was, and I was the...
Yes, he was.
He was. And I was the focus of his ire. But, you know, that's, you know... That's
but, you know, also, unbelievably cool as shit was that, like, he's playing the grandfather who's bedridden sick.
Yeah.
And he was offered, you know, in the movie, he's chugging beers. And, you know, he's passed away, and now they're reading his video will. And in that, he's chugging beers between his proclamations. And so he was offered the special FX one, which had a tube that would suck the beer out of the glass. And he said, "No, I'm not going to do that. My character's drinking these beers."
Right.
So... And then
it's great, Donald.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
It's not really, but yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Chris said it was.
Okay. Spot on.
Okay.
But then it was like, okay, well, do you need to go to the bathroom? He's like, "My character is ill and bedridden. He would not be able to get up and go to the bathroom."
Right.
He sat for 6 hours. He sat in that bed and chugged beers and never once got out of bed.
That is amazing. Did you remind him the movie was Beer Fest and not like a Sony Pictures classic period piece?
You don't have to.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm like, some of this.
Yeah, it's all bullshit.
Whatever, Sutherland. Whatever. Yeah. Just get out of bed and go to the bathroom. Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
come on.
Check it out. Here's my dick. This is how it works.
It's what's for dinner.
Yeah. Pee all over him. I like that you told the story about Sutherland being a fucking asshole to you.
Well, he was. I mean, there's no question. I mean, you know.
But you were
no
like,
question about it.
And you were like, when I was a kid watching Animal House.
Oh yeah.
Did I ever think this guy would be
like Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, you're like, but no, he was not that nice of a guy. I'll be quite honest with you.
I like one of my. This has nothing to do with, but this is another celebrity thing. We were, I think we were promoting Club Dread.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or no, I know. We were about to start shooting Club Dread. We were in the process of casting.
Yeah.
And Paul Stoddard and I, like, Fox flew us out to Los Angeles, and they put us in first class.
Right.
And so, and sitting across
the Hollywood assholes.
Assholes.
Yeah, with the crowdfunding money.
Yeah.
So across the aisle, it was Adam Arkin.
Uh-huh.
Alan's son, Adam.
Right.
And Paul Stoddard and I were playing cards. We were in the habit of playing this game, Deuces. And we're just playing, you know, it's like any other card game, like, you know, round after round after round after round. And Paul got up and he went to the bathroom, and Adam Arkin looked over and he came over to me. And in my mind, I had that thought for like 1 second. I thought he was going to say, I read your guy's script, Club Dread, because we were casting that role. And I just want to say it's really good. I'm a big fan of you guys.
Another
and I'd
amazing
love
impression.
To play
Another
it.
Amazing impression.
But what he said was he was like, excuse me, the sound, could you guys, the sound of the cards cutting on the table, it's like oh, it's like a knife cutting through the air. I was wondering if you guys could just stop playing cards.
Holy shit.
And I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And then he went and sat back down. And I can only imagine from his point of view what it was like to watch my buddy come and sit back down next to me, watch me lean over and say something to him, and then the two of us burst out laughing and then continue to play cards.
But you know what? That sort of opens up. Then it's just you go back and forth. The laboratory is just crop dusting. You just silent farts all the way back and
yeah.
forth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Behind. Now I have a positive story with okay. something weird. I don't know if I've ever – if I told this on the podcast, it's been years, but...
Is this an Adam Arkin story?
It's not an Adam Arkin story. It's even better. It's even better because it's very open to interpretation, and there's not really an ending to the story.
Okay.
It's just an experience, and maybe you can tell me what it means, but this was years ago when I was still working for MTV, and I was flying to like Spring Break or something for MTV Spring Break, and we were flying over. It was like the first time I think they flew me in first class. So this was a very big deal.
Sure,
to me, sure. Before the MTV, they wouldn't do it, and they would use other on-air talent to pit you against each other.
Sure,
we're not going to fly you business class. I mean, you know, Bill Bellamy didn't fly business class his first year. I'm like, I don't care.
Right.
So anyway, so I'm flying first class, and I had a whole. Kind of the two seats to myself, and then across from the aisle is Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
I like it already.
JCVD.
I like it already.
So we're flying over a storm, which I'd never really seen before. It's nighttime. We're flying over a storm, right. And we're flying over a lightning storm. And it was one of the most this is probably like 96, 97. It's one of the most breathtaking things I had ever seen. There's just like lightning whipping through the clouds, and it sort of looks like what I imagine, you know, like a brain in a sci-fi movie would look like. It's just so electrical and beautiful. And I sort of just said out loud in a pre-social media era, God, it's such a bummer that this is the most incredible thing I've seen. It's such a bummer that there's no way to take this experience and put it into someone else's head. And I wasn't saying it to him directly, but I just sort of said it. And he leans way over. He might have actually gotten up and sat next to me, and he goes, ah, but no, this experience was just for you, and it was special. And because of that, you own this experience, and you should always cherish it.
Wow.
And then he got back up and sat, and that was the only interaction I had with him.
Wow.
Was him just to come over and drop some sort of beautiful philosophical mantra.
Wow.
For this experience that I had with this thing.
And you met him since?
No.
Okay.
I don't know if that's how I don't know if he was drunk or if he's just super hippie or philosophical or
Belgian.
Whatever it was.
He's Belgian, right? Isn't he?
Maybe that's what it is.
I think that's what it
he's
is.
He's a time cop is
the
what
Belgian
he is.
Or
time
whatever.
Cop. That, there's another okay. one. Time cop's okay. got to come in halfway through your movie.
We've got to.
And be like, guys.
Oh, we've got to.
And Van Damme does the split, you know? And
sure.
On the wall.
All right.
You know what I
mean? So that is the big reveal. It's just people will forget by the time it comes out. But that's the big reveal is that time cop comes in at some point and gets involved in the thing.
It takes us back in time.
Yeah. Should we bring RoboCop into it? I mean, are we jumping the shark if I bring RoboCop
yeah.
in? To it?
Yeah, totally. Okay,
maybe okay. just because they just did a RoboCop yeah. not that long ago.
And also, right. Don't say the heart will go upstairs and get the RoboCop head and bring it down here. Like,
I don't have any
here.
RoboCop.
I have the
stuff.
RoboCop head.
I'm hoping he's going to go up there and bring Jean-Claude Van Damme down here. Like, check out what I've got.
He just jumps down.
Yeah, he yeah. comes down.
And is like, yeah. oh,
how are you?
I want Jean-Claude
I told
Van
you never to tell anyone. And then he breaks my neck.
Yeah, exactly. And then he says,
our moment.
Yeah. And then he looks at me and says, now this is your moment. And then we go, thank you. Thank you very much.
Don't tell anyone.
I feel like he's doing a good job. Of like coming back. I mean, I didn't see the movie JCVD, but I heard it was great.
Yeah.
And I've seen him in a bunch of commercials where he's sort of parodying himself. And
sure.
And he seems to get kudos along the way for these things.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't – but the indications that I have when I met him 20 years ago, over 20 years ago, was that he came off like a good guy, like a nice, normal, good guy, like that, you know – So not in the camp of martial arts people that you're like, oh yeah, they're not. Don't go near them.
Yeah, sure, you know. Right.
Well, even in the
Steven Seagal camp
or whatever. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, and you could see it in the movies, like in the Seagal movies back then. Something I noticed: Seagal never got hit. He was invincible. Like no matter how many guys came at him, like he'd always dodge them and snap their arm at a 90 degree.
Some Aikido.
But Van Damme, they would kick the shit out of him. Right. Van Damme was always on his hands and knees, sure. Bloodied eyes. And he'd come back. He'd dig down deep and come Blood back. Sport. And I always felt in all of them, Lionheart.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the others.
Yeah.
And the rest.
And the others. But I always felt that was indicative of what their personalities were. Like Seagal, just like, no way. And Van Damme is like, yeah, you take me to the end of the line. And like, you
know? I mean, again, another amazing.
Sure. I'm known for this.
Another,
I'm known just, for my great yeah, impressions.
Sure you are.
I'm yeah, known yeah. For an yes. Amazing array, an arsenal,
JCBD,
if you will, of impressions.
It's funny because like when we first started doing our podcast,
yeah.
One of the things I pitched to you was like, I want to do impressions every episode. And then get our guests to do impressions. Right. The thing is, I've only got like one impression.
Sure. Like, and then we would have people on like Will Sasso would come on, who's an amazing impressionist.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and he
yeah.
Would just, he would just kick your ass.
He would do the shitty impression I was trying to do.
Yeah, in like a second.
And work it out.
And then you realize it wasn't really worth your time.
Oh, man, yeah. I forgot. When Will Sasso came on, we did this whole riff about if Van Halen did songs about having small dicks. We called it Small Dick Van Halen. And we just were saying that, I live my life like I've got a small penis. You know, like, and it was just the dumbest thing that we, and people talked to me about that for like a year. They're like, you gotta, I don't know, tour it or just make an album of Small Dick Van Halen. I was like, no, I think it was just fun in the snippets yeah, that you yeah. Heard. I don't know if you, yeah. I don't know if you'd want a whole, if you really got the whole album, you'd be like, oh, thanks, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. No, he's.
We had the fun thing, same thing with Sasso because well, he's in Super Troopers too. Uh-huh. Sasso is. And so we were in the hotel after recording a podcast in the hotel with him when we were shooting. And he was doing this routine of Schwarzenegger ordering food off the from room service. And it was the funniest thing. I wish I could do it. It was the funniest thing I've ever heard. And it got so loud that the phone rang and it was the person next door at the hotel. Asking us to keep it down.
Was
and
it then, Adam Arkin?
It could have yeah. Led to this whole other riff of maybe that person believing that it really was Schwarzenegger in the room ordering off room service.
He should have answered as Schwarzenegger and said, yeah.
Yeah, I know it.
But, opportunity you know, missed, guys.
God, I know we fucked
next
up.
Time get you're in a Will hotel Sasso on the phone. Get Will Sasso in a hotel.
No, in fact, that was the episode. So we got kicked out. We got a noise complaint. So we're like, all right, let's move this to another room. And so we had the whole portable kit walking through the hotel. and Kevin... Well, okay, I'll say this. One of us accidentally gave away what hotel we were staying in Waltham, Massachusetts.
Right.
And we started getting the tweets saying like, hey, you gave away the location of your hotel. And
no,
we didn't know
– for a month.
Yeah. But we didn't know which one of us it was. And yeah. So, and that's always nerve-wracking in Broken Lizard. Like when you fuck up, like if it turns out to be you, you're going to get killed.
Sure.
And we didn't know who it was. And then, you know, we went and listened to it. It was Kevin. So.
Did anyone show up? And
no, they
no
didn't.
One came.
They didn't.
No one came.
Were you a little disappointed? Like, oh, no
yeah.
One.
Oh, that's a yeah. Bummer.
I thought, even like one.
What about no groupies or anything?
One,
like you'd go to the desk and say, any messages from me?
Yeah. Is that
no,
right?
Still no.
Nope.
Not in the last 10 minutes, please. Yeah. I'm running a hotel.
Nobody gave a shit.
Nobody cared.
That's all right.
So 420, Super Troopers 2 comes yep. Out, and then your podcast also.
Yeah.
Chewing It with Kevin and Steve. We used to be on Nerdist, and then I don't know why we fucking took off.
Yeah, the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, we split.
The,
oh, yeah.
Left the thing, and we followed.
Yeah, we followed you right out the door.
Ah.
Yeah. That's because we want to still work with Katie Levine. That's
Katie's the best.
Yeah, Katie Levine is the reason. You
this
know,
podcast, Katie is the foundational backbone of this podcast. It wouldn't exist without Katie Levine.
And she, as she left Nerdist, she only took like four podcasts with her.
Yeah,
and she was very selective. One of them.
Yeah, thank you, Katie.
She was very selective.
Thank you, Katie.
Yeah, Katie's the best. You know, people always ask for like, hey, on the next host, we usually get Katie to talk, and we pitch it to her, and she's like, I don't want to. I mean,
we're still going to have that episode where we interview Katie Levine.
Yeah, we've been trying for a long time.
Can I tell you, though, in the beginning, I'm sorry we're talking like you're not here, but in the beginning, you know, like when Katie comes on and she does stuff in the intros of ours, in the beginning, she was way not a fan of it. But she, like, totally, I feel like you've embraced it since then.
Kind of used to it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Yeah, I think people deserve to hear some of the Katie Levine story. I think
That's
people,
it.
I think
we're
it is
it,
time.
Katie Levine. We're doing it.
Doing a Katie Levine. You're going to do Super Troopers versus Reno 911,
right.
Police Academy, and Time Cop. And then even just saying it sounds really awesome. Yeah. Even just saying all those things together sounds. I mean, I got like a bit of a chub.
Sure.
Just even saying those things together.
Putting them all in the same sentence.
Yeah.
I have to say, of all the ones we talked about, whether it was Reno 911, Police Academy, it's the Van Damme of it that I'd be.
That he just pops in and at the end.
If you were in a movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Sure.
I guarantee you that if you were able to pull that off and you guys did it and Tom and Ben and the rest of that gang did it, there's 0% chance he would say no. Because he would – I mean, he seems to be fun.
But you could get him anyway, I feel like. I feel like in the idea we've been talking about for Super Troopers 3 that there's a role for Van Damme.
You know what's funny though? We have a buddy who was producing a movie. I won't say who it was, but it was a Van Damme movie like down in New Orleans. And he was so excited to work with Van Damme. And the night before they started shooting, it was that when Van Damme had his heart attack.
Oh,
remember that?
Yeah.
Van Damme had a heart attack like 3 years ago or something.
Oh.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he had to drop out of the movie.
Oh my God!
So,
but he was like, "All right, heart, take me to the edge."
This is my moment.
Now I will kick the shit out of you.
That's right. And they're coming back now.
Squash this heart.
Yeah. This lion heart.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
No, I have actual lion's heart. It's an extra heart.
It's Belgian.
Yes, it tells me to do the splits.
Well, I cannot thank you enough for coming and doing this. This was incredibly enlightening, too, in terms of crowdfunding and getting something together. And you know, because we always tell people on the podcast, like, oh, just go make your thing. But you know, the more you want to scale up that thing, the more complicated. If not that you shouldn't do it, but just expect the unexpected, but be flexible. Be flexible along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, I mean, God, it's like we keep learning. Every time we make a movie, we learn something.
But also the landscape changes. Every time it's how to reach an audience keeps evolving.
And what was what's the most valuable piece of advice, having gone through this crowdfunding process, that you can give to people as we're wrapping this up?
It's kind of the same that it's always been, which is just you have to just go out there and do it. Like nobody else is going to do it for you. You literally have to do whatever you can to make it happen.
But that's why, you know, we've made a bunch of movies, and that's what you end up realizing, that you still have to do that. You still have to go do it for yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even though you've made that many movies and your movies do well,
it
still wasn't easy. This like fifth or sixth time out or whatever it was, still like it's so rare. I think no matter how far along you think you are, there's always going to be obstacles, even if they're new obstacles or the same obstacles or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So just know that that's going to be the case, and don't let that stop you from doing it anyway.
Yeah, and it ends up being worthwhile. That's the whole point, I think. You know, we love the movie that we made, and we're excited to show it to people. And thanks to the fans who helped us.
Yeah, and it turned out well.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch it. I have a link to it, and I'm excited to take pictures of you in the dark helmet.
Oh, my God, I can't wait.
With your dick out.
Oh, my God, I can't wait.
Yeah,
it's what's for dinner. Yeah.
Doing a split on the wall.
There it is.
Okay, good.
All right, the end. Enjoy your burrito.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.